Off the ball
on News Talk
in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Yeah, the man you heard interjecting a moment ago is Emmett Malone of the Irish Times. Good evening.
Hey, Dave.
Of the Irish Times, not the Inish Times. Both.
Yeah, maybe you thought I was from the Inish Times when I was invited on, the way things have been going lately, you know.
Oh, let's not go there. I hope some of our listeners know what that's worth reference to. And maybe some don't, but I'm not going to elaborate on it. Obviously, the Inish Times and the Irish Times, both publications of the highest integrity.
Absolutely, yeah. And yeah. All that was a cracking story today. I wish I'd had that. Yeah, it was
absolutely.
Great stuff.
We are going to be speaking to Graham Hunter very shortly. A lot going on in Spain, in Europe. We'll be speaking about what's happening in La Liga. A big defeat for Real Madrid last night. I watched the highlights last night too. Real Betis at home. They're 7 points behind Barcelona now. And there has been another development in the whole Edinson Cavani, Neymar, Dani Alves situation at PSG as well. An apology from Neymar. So given that there are plenty of ex-Barcelona players involved, we'll speak to Graham about how that story is going down in the Catalonian capital. But there's a couple of things I wanted to run past you first, and before we bring Graham in, the lead soccer story in Richie's roundup there was the fact that it looks like finally Chelsea will be able to offload Diego Costa to Atletico Madrid in January. And there was a piece in The Guardian today, and they were talking about the irony involved in that the one fixture they really could have done with him in was last weekend when they were struggling to break down an untypically stubborn Arsenal team.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a big loss. I know they haven't had him in their ranks at all this season, and Atletico Madrid are very much the beneficiaries in this.
If
he's the Diego Costa that turns up and wants to play, of course.
Yeah, for sure. And it does seem to be the club that he does want to play for. You know, if he's been problematic for Chelsea, there's no doubt about that. When he was good, he was great. Really outstanding. But he's been a handful for them off the pitch on a consistent base, both for Mourinho at times, and clearly for Costa. So I mean, there was an issue there. I think in the end, Chelsea will view it as a decent bit of business. They've I think the initial deal, if I understand it correctly, is a loan until the end of the season, but with Atletico committing to buy him at that stage for around 57-58 million pounds, 66 million euro. That fee has held up pretty well, considering the way that Costa himself was really holding out for the move, making life very, very difficult. His situation at Chelsea, despite the fact that they'd been telling him to come back, train, get fit and make himself available for the first team again, was clearly utterly untenable. They had no chance really of ever having him back in the team. Conte had kind of made clear he didn't want him in it, but you know, given the kind of lack of options that they've had, I think they'll be happy to have got more or less what they paid for Morata there. And Morata's shaping up kind of pretty well. He's scored a few goals. He's a very different sort of player. Probably doesn't have the virtually nobody has the kind of bite to them that Costa has in his game, but you know, has you know, people would say coming in from good spells, particularly at Juventus, also at Real Madrid, where he wasn't really first choice but scored goals when he played, would have been maybe some allowances made for him if he'd taken longer to hit the ground running at Chelsea, but he's done well. So all told, I think they'll be happy enough. I think the best case scenario would have been that Costa just was trouble free and played for many years for them, you know, because he was a tremendous asset to them. And
they did get the best out of him. They saw the best of him. Two league titles in 3 seasons.
Yeah.
Albeit a lot of baggage.
So much baggage, and very hard to like him, and yet he kind of had to have a sneaking
regard. But the Chelsea fans loved him
for the animalistic sort of approach he took to. I mean, just so combative, you know.
You'd want him in your
extreme
team,
but it was incredible. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you would.
There's also something interesting. I don't know if you've read any of Liam Rossignol's columns in The Guardian.
Nothing much, no.
They're pretty good and they're so honest. And he was part of the Brighton team that kind of saw a 1-0 lead overturned against Bournemouth at the weekend, and Bournemouth getting their first Premier League win of the new season. But he was the player that gave the ball away when Brighton were 1-0 and then Bournemouth get a leveller and they win 2-1 at the end. But he was writing in his column, "As I traipsed off the pitch, I can feel sick rising in my throat. I get on the team coach and I'm going over that moment, and he talks about how he gets into bed around 2 a.m. for the next 5 hours. He's staring at the ceiling, just watching the same movie in his mind over and over, at that moment where he gives the ball away. He hears pundits who've only recently stopped playing the game fan the flames of blame with supporters who then criticise players. It amazes me they've all apparently forgotten the experience of losing a match and the sleepless nights they've all suffered in the aftermath of defeat. I feel this has helped create a damaging vacuum in terms of the relationships between players and supporters, which is ironic since I can honestly say that I've never come across a player who doesn't care or sleeps well after losing a match. That's pretty honest stuff, and it's probably something we never really think of when we just say, oh, that player really should have done better, that's a terrible mistake to make. And
yeah, I don't know, I'd kind of view it slightly differently, in the sense that I think that that's, I don't, no harm to him, but I think that's what we all actually hope these guys feel like after these things.
Sometimes,
you know,
question.
Yeah, exactly. I think that if you know you've got a player who's on 10, 20, 50, 100 grand a week, you think they should be tortured by making a costly mistake for their team. You think they you know, you don't wish them any ill will or whatever, but you want it to matter that much to them. And yet, you know, I think the stories that stand out are more the stories where you hear of guys going on out clubbing afterwards, and really it doesn't seem to matter to them at all. I think that's really what hurts fans. You know, I mean, obviously fans become, you know, agitated, annoyed, disappointed, whatever, when you know, players make mistakes like that that cost their team. But I think if there's that commitment there, I think if they feel that you know, the player wants it with his heart and soul and is going to go home and lie awake all night thinking about it, then they respect that. They respect the fact that the player has given his all.
Maybe it's the players who are on 50, 100, 200 grand a week. They're not actually the players that have it bother them to that level when they get into bed at night. It's actually the players who are probably closer to 5 or 10 grand a week, and I doubt there's too many players on massive wages at Brighton.
Yeah. I don't know. I suppose it's a balance, because, you know, I guess in these sort of situations, to survive at that level, you have to be the sort of player who makes a mistake and moves on. You know, I guess, you know, when you think about it, that is sort of, you know, you have to have a coping strategy for that, and to pick yourself up and move on. But, you know, look, we have heard stories over the last few years of teams, particularly where managers have perhaps lost dressing rooms or whatever, and players are sort of, you know, half happy to, you know, buy their time for a change to be made, where really there doesn't seem to be that sort of sense of pain about mistakes or defeats or anything like it.
Evening, Graham.
Hey there.
How are things?
Disastrous. I'm in the foulest mood probably that you've ever got me on off the ball, and that's because the Mighty Dandies are playing in the Cup quarter final at Motherwell. We've deliberately worn Dublin strips. And it's made no damn difference whatsoever. Okay, there's no Dean Rock. Losing 2-0, there's 8 minutes left, and it's just been pathetic. However, moving swiftly on, if there are other things you want to talk about, I'm sure that'll cheer me up.
Were your expectations otherwise?
Much higher. Right. It's been pathetic. 7 stone weaklings, we can play football, but it doesn't look as if we are. It looks like we're playing tiddlywinks. And I say again, listen, given the way that the All-Ireland finished at the weekend there, I'd have thought the strip choice, the colour choice, which we don't traditionally play, and would have been enough on its own, and it hasn't been. So boo, hiss. Don't like football anymore.
Well, let's hope by the end of this chat your mood will have lightened a little bit.
I think there's no chance, but go ahead and try.
Emma Malone of the Irish Times is with us as well. I want to get to a pretty interesting situation with La Liga in a moment, Graham, particularly after the defeat of Real Madrid at the hands of Betis last night. But there has been another development in the Le Clash, as many are dubbing the situation at Paris Saint-Germain between Neymar and Dani Alves and Edinson Cavani. Apparently today, according to Get French Football, Neymar today apologised to the entire PSG dressing room for his behaviour towards Cavani and set pieces. The origin of that story is from L'Équipe. I'm not quite sure what that means, Graham, as to whether Neymar is now saying, I shouldn't have done what I did, and Edinson, you can now take the penalties and the free kicks, or is he apologising for the fact that there's been such an outcry over it? But when it comes to the next game, it's very much Neymar will have laid down his territory and will be taking these set pieces.
It's gone from being immensely amusing as a story. I thought it was fabulous to watch, really. The whole dynamics of the characters, who played what role. Namor came out of it utterly humiliated, even though it was Cavani who felt undermined, even though it was Cavani who stumped out of the stadium, didn't go to the mix zone, which he was supposed to do, went down the concrete steps into the subterranean parking. Very clearly in the huff, you know, the only guy who possibly came out of a winner was Dani Alves, who imposed himself maybe in the wrong way to make sure the free kick wasn't given to Cavani, was given to Namor instead. Namor made a jackass of himself when you're the most expensive player in the world, and if you want to assert your right, if you don't want to be taking penalties or free kicks on a meritocracy, then you tell the people as you're being bought, I don't care if you don't like it, but if you want me, these are my rules. You must tell the coach must tell the players, and that way you pretend to have clean hands rather than mooching up like some sort of... I mean, it really looked like a lion and some sort of sly hyena. That's what the theatre was to me, and if it was the law of the jungle, and Enson Cavani roared and the hyena slunk off, but Cavani missed a penalty. I think there's another element to what you said in the... Dani Alves hosted or inspired a get-together lunch for the squad today, which is, I'm not clear how much that happens in the UK in terms of, like, let's all sit down to lunch. I don't really think that's the done thing. It used to, when we were all growing up watching football in Scotland, England, Ireland, Wales, it would end up, you know, there'd be a drink-up maybe just to sort things out. Often there'd be a punch-up. We treat football differently in the north part of Europe where we all come from, but It's in Spanish football, and these guys are either Hispanic or they've been involved in La Liga. There's very often the idea of a barbecue or a lunch where everybody gets together. Faults are aired. It's supposed to be bringing the peace. It's without the coaches. Dani Alves authored that today. I'm not going to pretend to confirm or deny, but what Neymar did or didn't say, I've seen the reports. I haven't been able to stand up for my own benefit yet. I think he's quite capable of doing that. When I've criticised him, it's because of his immaturity, and I think he does genuinely believe that he's a Peter Pan figure who will never get old, who will never be called out for some of his choices, and maybe at 25 when you're a world talent, that's easy to think. But one of the... He isn't necessarily a guy who won't forgive, who digs in, who likes to go to war, who feeds off conflict and frenzy. That's not really him. I think he did so patently make a mistake, either tactically of not having sorted this out beforehand or having to walk away with his tail between his legs in the penalty situation, that he needed to be the one to say sorry. How this plays out long game with Cavani, a guy who, you know, I state this time and again, David Moyes, as Manchester United manager, told me that the deal to buy Cavani was done, that Cavani was happy to come to Manchester United but asked for a clause in his contract whereby he had to be a guaranteed starter. He's the kind of guy, therefore, that undermines my respect for Cavani in that situation in general. Fine player, line leader. You'd have hoped would have respond to the pressure by maybe bringing his best ever football. I can only see the idea that Cavani moves at the end of the season. That's the logical thing. I can't see that this feud gets buried away or that they make pals between now and then, no matter whether they win trophies or not. And I think that's something that, you know, there's an unnamed character in all this, and that Unai Emery said to them, lads, before, not just after, sort it out yourselves. That probably wasn't very wise. It doesn't reflect too well on Emery. And Emery now has to make good decisions about not simply how the team functions, how the two of them work it out, but how he's viewed by his employers. And, you know, to me, it's fabulous. FC Hollywood, it used to be Bayern Munich, and right now it's Paris Saint-Germain, no?
It is fascinating, but I'm kind of intrigued by your stance on the role of Dani Alves in this, where you think he's emerged from it as a bit of a winner of the trio involved, because my stomach was churning watching Dani Alves' sly role in this and the clandestine nature in which he had clearly premeditated the handover of this ball to Neymar as he slipped past the body of Alves with their backs to Cavani.
It's fantastic if you could do that in the midfield for the British and Irish Lions. If you could hand off just like that so that somebody could, you know, breach the gain line and run towards the try line, then it was a brilliant piece of play. As far as I'm concerned, Dani Alves wins in that situation. Whether you think he did the right thing or the wrong thing, if you do something that whether you think you're imposing your will, helping a friend, or whether you think you know you're breaking the rules, what you want to do in that situation is win. And he dominated. Cavani kind of backed off him. Dani Alves smuggled the ball up his jumper kind of thing to give it to Neymar. You might well think that it's the wrong thing to do. If it was me playing in that team, I might well have said, you know, that's not the way you do it, Danny. But he came out of it ahead, and he came out. He's the one who's authored the get together today. But again, typically, he's not a great grudge bearer. He's somebody who should. Dani Alves is meant to be, and you may criticise him still more for what he did on the pitch at the free kick. He's brought into this dressing room to somewhat be not a godfather figure, but somebody who leads the dressing room from in the social side, in the way that there is. Convivencia, as they say in Spain, that the way that people live off each other, live together. And in doing so, doing this today, I think that it's a step in the right direction. If there's a division between Brazilians and the Uruguayan, if there's a division of ego there, remember that we knew which way Dani Alves would go. He was he verbally agreed, I know this to be a fact, with Pep Guardiola and Chiqui Bergestein, that he was going to sign for Manchester City. And approximately 5.5 days later, on the say-so of Neymar, I said, listen, pal, I'm going to Paris Saint-Germain. Nobody knows it for sure yet, but I am. Go to them instead. I want you. They want you. You know whose team he's in if there's a split. So I'm not saying he did the right thing by smuggling the ball away from Cavani to give to Neymar, but I like people who do things and win, and I'm comparing it to the way that Neymar made a jackass of himself and what he did, and slunk off with his tail between his legs.
Okay, that's an interesting take, and one I haven't heard before. Last night, Graham, I watched the highlights of the Real Madrid-Betis game. Brilliant game, albeit only
how
one
good?
Goal in it.
Dave, I mean, seriously, how good?
The save from Keylor Navas is...
No, the save from Adan. Keylor Navas makes a brilliant save.
The one where he
corner.
Flings himself to his right, ball heading into the top corner.
The save of the save from Keylor Navas is absolutely beautiful. I totally agree with you. But in your, I mean, how many times in your life have you seen a better save than Adan from Gareth Bale?
Yes, it was astonishing. The one he pushed
literally,
onto the post from
it?
The back flick.
Yeah, where the ball comes in from Carvajal on the right, the trajectory of the cross is absolutely perfect. It's coming to Bale. Bale is standing facing the crosser with his back to goal, and he uses his right instep to do that little flick, the kind of flick when the player reverses a pass when he's got his back to the guy he's passing to, that you'd think you see on Soccer AM on Showboats all the time. But he does that on the volley with his back to goal, sends it beyond Adan in the Real Betis goal. And Adan, by instinct, by the way that antelopes sniff the air and go, there's a tiger coming. It literally was primordial that Adan flung himself to his right and not only got a hand to it, but scooped it onto the right-hand post. Genuinely, I have it in the top 4 or 5 goalkeeping moments of my entire career. It was utterly astonishing. And the fact that it then gets more merit because Real Betis win at the Bernabeu for the first time in 19 years with a goal of really clever creation just made that moment. And poor old Bale, who'd had a decent night where he'd set up tons of chances for Ronaldo. He scored a beauty of a goal from an Isco quarterback pass at the weekend up at the Anoeta against Real Sociedad. Last week, he's got 3 assists in a 3-0 win for Apoel. And still, he's having to conquer difficult treatment in the media, jeers and whistles from the fans. And he produces that. That goal would go down in the all-time history of Real Madrid goals. Adan, a Madrid-born Madridista, playing for Betis, not produced one of the greatest saves I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was a spectacular save. And they're in big trouble, Real, this early in the season. You've often talked to us about how quickly in a season the La Liga title can be lost. Like a 7-point deficit back up to Barcelona, having only scored 9 goals. They're down in 7th place. They've only 5 games into the campaign, Graham, but they're an awful long way back and a serious job of work on their hands to try and make this a proper title fight.
It's true. When Zidane first took over, he cut back this kind of deficit when he took over from Rafa Benitez in the January of January 2 seasons ago. It isn't impossible. It isn't simply not impossible because there is so long to go. There is not a great deal that's unhealthy about Real Madrid. It's not death by 1,000 cuts because they ain't dead, but it's injured by 1,000 cuts because they've had sequential suspensions, which some of which have been of their own making, some of which have been unfortunate because of refereeing decisions. But when Ramos gets sent off late in a game when he's already saved himself a red card after pushing the Deportivo La Coruña player in the face and then subsequently gets a second yellow, when Ronaldo pushes the referee in the Super Cup and gets a 5-game ban, these things are self-inflicted. They haven't helped. The injuries have been piled one injury on top of another. And the crucial thing is, there's not a whole lot wrong. You saw that when they started by winning two trophies this season. You know, they beat Manchester United, deserved to win the European Super Cup. They beat Barcelona by 5-1, hugely deserved to win the Spanish Super Cup. There has been a millimetre of relaxation, you can see, but no more than a millimetre. And the only big thing that's wrong is that they haven't been putting their chances away. They've been creating chances to win the games which have caused them the 7-point deficit, the 2-2 draw against Valencia at the Bernabeu, the 1-1 draw against Levante at the Bernabeu, and last night's remarkable defeat in the 94th minute.
Yeah.
Because in each game, they've spurned 6 or 7 scorable chances.
Graham, before we let you go, you're in Barcelona, as we know, and it's an intriguing time to be there at the moment with this unofficial vote on Catalan independence. How are things there tonight? What's the atmosphere like in the city?
Everybody I know is marching or protesting twice a day. Something that I admire very much in the Catalans is and it's very evocative to me of the second year when I moved here. 2003, there was a protest against Spain's potential UN involvement in the Iraq conflict. And for the first time, we heard our neighbours open the windows, open the balcony doors, lean out there, take the pans and bang pots and pans together. And it happens at 10 o'clock every night. It has happened tonight. Very raucous, very noisy. It happens all over Catalonia. So that people are, in a civic sense, making their anger, no vote, be known. The marches haven't become violent, but as you know from the news, I don't need to repeat the news to you, there have been arrests that seem to everybody outside to have been provocative, undemocratic. The hard fact for those who are asking for a vote and asking for democracy is that Franco, and I'll say that name again, Franco's constitution, so rules set by a dictator say that everything that the Catalans are asking for is actually illegal. So if there's a rule that is part of law and civic law that was set by a man like a dictator like Franco, does it invalidate it? Sadly, no, say the government, no, say the police. So I think that what is being asked for in the region or country that I live in, Catalonia, is reasonable, but they don't have the law on their side, and therefore it is a delicate situation, one which is provoking a great deal of ire, which is becoming entrenched. There's not a lot of dialogue. But I do, one thing I'll say is, I think all of you that I know, and the majority of people I know that I bump into who listen to the show, would think that you know, freedom of expression and democracy are things that we merit in a decent society. How that's going to come in this situation, which is so entrenched, I'm not quite clear. But I like the way that the Catalunya, if it has something to say, says it loud and says it very proud and says it remorselessly.
And the full-time whistle has gone, Graham, and Motherwell have won 3-0.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Thanks, William.
I hate freedom of expression in this instance. Good night.
We'll chat to you next week. Yeah, this is the Football Show. Emmett Malone of the Irish Times is with us. Our live Premier League offering this Sunday afternoon is Brighton against Newcastle at the Amex Stadium. I'll be there alongside Alan McLaughlin. Ahead of that, we're going to be hearing on Saturday's show from Republic of Ireland centre-half Shane Duffy. We recorded that a little earlier today. He spoke about that horror injury in 2010 that forced him into emergency surgery to save his life.
You do worry, like don't get me wrong, it was a major thing that happened in my life, and I was only a kid, and it's just sometimes you don't know what to do, really. You're just trying to get, all you think about is football and am I going to play in that, but you get on with it, you grow up, and it made me a stronger guy and matured me on, and I don't really think about it much now at all. I don't even think about it at all, sorry, and that's the way I've got to be. If I dwelled on it and let it affect me, it would slow me down, and I would struggle, and I wouldn't be the same player or man I am. So sometimes you take it into your life, but listen, I'm in a good place now, and no worries from it all, and I'm just happy I've got a second chance to still play, and then to play at this great club, and obviously, to represent my country is just, I can't be asking for much more at the minute. I'm just trying to stay positive and stay on a level, so level grounded, and just keep working hard, and that's what I'm trying.
Well, thankfully, Emmett, he has come on so far since then, since the day he ruptured the blood supply to his liver, and credits the incredible work of Jerry McEntee at the Mater Hospital for saving his life. He was only 18 at the time. But it's great that he's a bit in a position to speak about it now, and 7 years out from it happening, and he's a Premier League footballer and he's a mainstay in the Irish team.
Yeah, it's been a remarkable journey for him. I mean, he was very young then. It was a very serious injury. Could have, I mean, you know, could have been a really tragic day for him. But he's battled his way back from that in terms of injuries. He's found his way in his career after probably spending too long at Everton before kind of realizing that he wasn't going to make the breakthrough there, and dropped down down a division in order to get regular football, and has really kind of, you know, it's all gone to plan for the last two seasons or so. Martin O'Neill likes him a lot. He poses, you can see why. He's not probably the finished article as a defender. We've seen some of the rawness in some of the games that we've that he's played for Ireland over the last 12-15 months, in terms of positional errors and the mistakes that he makes while trying to dig himself out of a hole. But he's making steady progress.
A primary scoring threat.
And absolutely, as I was just going to say, yeah, just such a has changed things around the opposition area for us at set pieces. And set pieces were already such an enormous part of our game, and now he adds hugely to that in terms of posing an aerial threat in 10, 6, 8, 10, 12 yards from the opposition goal.
Right. The UEFA Nations League, Emmett.
I can feel a tingling sensation all over me, Dave.
Everybody just take a deep breath.
Yes.
It's kind of been in the pipeline for a while.
Sit down, calm yourselves.
The finer details of it emerged today. It is a competition which UEFA say will replace the majority of friendlies in international football. It'll begin in September of next year, and they'll separate teams according to how they're ranked. So there'll be four leagues, A, B, C, and D, according to your position in the UEFA national team coefficient rankings. So it's going to be the top teams will be the top 12 in Ligue 1 and so on and so forth. And we just thought this might just be another slightly more quirky way of stomaching the international friendly circuit as it currently stands, and something in which not an awful lot of football fans have any interest. But it's going to be a little more impactful than we thought, because there are going to be a major implications when it comes to qualifying for the European Championships. First up, European 2020.
Yeah, I did. To be fair, Dave, you know, most of this has been floating around for a good while. There's no great surprises yesterday when they confirmed all of this. They have confirmed everything they'd been talking about, which, despite the negative reaction to some of it, essentially, as you say, it's all kind of pretty straightforward. Four divisions, the European rankings after the next round of games. So I think the rankings are taken on the 13th of October, and then the draw for this will be in January, I think.
Yeah, January 24th. We're currently 24th in the UEFA coefficients. That would put us in League B, as things stand right now.
Are we? Okay.
Not in the world rankings now.
Okay,
but
I have us 22nd, but I'll bow to your superior knowledge.
Well, we may be looking at different publications.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. So it's exciting stuff. We'd be in the second. We'd be in the second division. In there with the likes of. You know, the sort of teams I guess you'd expect for the most part, like the Swedens of the world, the Ukraines, Bosnia and Herzegovina, teams we've, you know, a couple of teams, Turkey, a couple of teams we've come up against in playoffs over the last 20 years. I think, you know, at the top of this, it doesn't make a huge amount of difference. They're going to restructure the qualifying groups slightly. So you'll have 10 groups and the top two qualify from each of those groups. And that's all becomes very clean.
It takes away the third place playoff qualifiers, though.
Takes away a lot of the flexibility.
That was our pathway to France.
Absolutely, yeah. And that has been territory that we've been very familiar with over the years. What it does then is it frees up four spaces. This, we're talking about Euro 2020, obviously the 13 host nations, the 13 host cities. The hosts do not qualify as a right. So all 24 places are up for grabs. And the four places in this instance go to the teams from these four divisions. Where things start getting messy is that the teams from the top division, I think it's 12 teams, Most of those, if not all of them, you'd expect to have qualified anyway. So, yeah, these teams play off against each other in various subdivisions. They then go progress to semi-finals and finals. But if, say, all 12 of the teams in the top division have qualified, they simply bump up teams to take those places from League B. And then when, you know, in the event that that leaves no teams in League B to play off, they're going to bump teams up from League C. And each of these divisions will produce one finalist at the European Championships, come what may. And so at the moment, if you look at the list I'm looking at, the bottom 15 teams are in the fourth division, and that division would currently be topped by Lithuania ahead of Belarus, Georgia. Now, actually, you know, you can't knock the quality there given the way Georgia played us off the park a few weeks ago, but Macedonia, the Faroe Islands, Latvia, Luxembourg, one of these teams is going to go through to the European Championships. So what you have here, and Euro 20 is, you know, becoming a kind of, you know, such a mishmash of experiments and ideas, and UEFA really throwing the kitchen sink at. And a lot of this is driven by television rights. In this case, the Nations League is driven by an attempt to kind of monetize the friendlies to some extent, put some structure on them so that UEFA can generate more money because it has committed itself to paying so much to the national federations in annual payments to centralize the TV rights. So we have a bit of that. We have the European Championships, which was spread out across Europe on a sort of flight of fancy by Michel Platini, who's of course is gone now. And we, you know, however we come out of this in terms of 2024, and they might do a bit of adjusting back on this, at least the whole thing will be going probably back into one country. But 2020 could really go either way. Who knows? Perhaps Platini will be proven right and it will be a tremendous success and a wonderful experience, and everyone will, you know, Dubliners included, will get, you know, a little taste of the magic.
Perhaps.
My God, it could be quite a shambles as well.
There's an awful lot of logistical issues to get through when it comes to that tournament.
And UEFA, just, you know, as they've done many times with their European club competitions in an attempt to kind of tweak this, tweak that, you know, squeeze an extra few quid out of it. The structural changes, the tinkering, undermine the continuity of the competition, undermine the tradition that's built up around it. And my God, what you have here is, you know, we're going to have, you know, one, possibly two really pretty weak teams rattling around in a European Championship final. Now we've seen already with the Champions League, you know, some teams taking pastings in the early stages of these competitions, and really there doesn't seem, you know, at least there's a basis in tradition for kind of encouraging the smaller leagues to try and aspire to qualifying for that competition. But really, I don't see what we gain here from having a much weaker nation in terms of the quality of the finals tournament.
We're always lamenting the lack of Irish faces in the Premier League and the bigger clubs over in England. It hasn't been a bad week as regards the League Cup, and the players have been given an opportunity to play. Particularly Brighton got a couple of guys in there, but we've seen Jason Malumphy get an opportunity. A couple of Waterford men were in the Brighton team. We've seen Aaron Connolly get a little bit of a chance as well. Richie Towell, he got a little chance to impress over the last week or so. And Jose Mourinho was saying that maybe English football can do without the League Cup. It's easy for him to say, because he feels we'll do better in Europe if we don't have these games to deal with and before or after European ties. But it's easy for Manchester United to say, and the bigger clubs like them, but for the lower tier clubs and players who are desperate to get some game time within, it could actually be a very important competition.
Yeah. Look, it has been good for some Irish players, and it's great to see them get some game time. But it is a bit unfortunate that, you know, as you say, you have on the one hand these players who we desperately want to see get game time play in a competition that, you know, the quality of which, you know, sparks a wave, not just from Mourinho, of suggestions and clamour, is, you know, that we just do away with this competition. Look, I agree. I think it is a bit rich for the likes of Mourinho, the likes of Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea, you know, to be sort of saying that this cup is outdated. Things they get everything their own way. Everything is teed up here for them to make the maximum amount of money. We see the disparity in figures in La Liga yesterday between the top and bottom clubs in terms of budgets for wages, and it's outrageous. You know, I mean, there's this sense of pointlessness, you know, about even playing the tournament, you know, in terms of it being down to two or three clubs before you start because they are the ones with the money, and really, you know, that's fine. That is the way of the world. We accept that. And barring UEFA and their, you know, delivering on their, on, I would have thought their rather kind of idealistic talk, fanciful talk at this stage of budget caps and you know, delivering on financial fair play, which you've been talking about for years, but which Paris Saint-Germain then go and make a mockery of. Really, the big clubs have got their way, but the smaller clubs, for the smaller clubs, this is part of the compensation, and they shouldn't be allowed to go by the wayside.
Absolutely. Emmett, thanks a million for coming in.
It's been a pleasure.
Really appreciate it. We're back tomorrow night from 7 o'clock previewing Sunday's All-Ireland Ladies Football Final between Dublin and Mayo. The Crappy Quiz will be back and much more. Tom Dunn is up next.
Off the Ball.
On Newstalk. In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.